All right, we'll start Tapa Kutalid, continuing with the stories of Rebbe and Rebbe's Tira. Last story, which is an important story because it has, even though it's a story, it's one of the halakhic sources for a very controversial topic. So, Hawiyoma, top line there. Hawiyoma the Nach Navshe the Rabbi, on the day that Rebbe was going to pass away, Gozer Abonon Tanita, there were Gozer Atanis. That anybody who says that Rebbe's gonna, you know, that Rebbe's dead or that Rebbe has died, then he will be pierced with a sword. So you see that they number one is that they obviously didn't want that. They didn't want to come to the real, you know, the realization or face the reality of him passing away. But also their belief was that Rabbi was going to live, whether he was dead or not, he was going to live on. I mean, that Rabbi would never die in that sense, that his, you know, that his teaching, his legacy, his neshama would live on, and therefore nach nafshe wasn't the appropriate term. But I think more importantly is that the realization, just from a pashpshat, the realization that Rabbi had died was too much for them to bear. So they didn't want anybody to say that, and then that meant that someone had given up hope that he could live. So they weren't willing to accept that. Slika amte the Rabbi Igra. Rabbi's maidservant went up to the roof. Amra elyonim avakshim et Rabbi, v'tachtonim avakshim et Rabbi. Those above, the malachim, are requesting Rabbi, and tachtonim, his talmidim, the chachamim, are requesting Rabbi. Here it's own, shikofu tachtonim et elyonim. That hopefully the tachtonim should subjugate the ones above, meaning that the tfilos of the rabbanon should be heard, and Rabbi should not pass away. Gaven de Chazai kama zimnin de al beit hakisei. So she saw that he was going to the bathroom numerous times, meaning that he was passing away from chuli me'ayim, right, from a stomach ailment, which we mentioned before, that was one of the simon of a tzaddikim. So they died of chuli me'ayim, of a stomach ailment. So every time he went to the bathroom, he had to be chuli tzis tefillin and take them off, and then umanach luhu, and then put them back on, become its tzayir. Meaning that his performance of mitzvos was inhibited by his condition, his physical condition. So at first it seems that she thought that Rabbi could continue, and even in his weakened state, he could continue to teach, he continued to be himself. But then she realized that his quality of life, first of all, had deteriorated significantly, because in order for him to continue to perform the mitzvos, it was a tremendous burden on him. And number two is that his ability to execute on the mitzvahs and teach was compromised at this point in time. So she then said, Amra, hiratzon, she kofel yonim et atachnun, that the malachim should win and that Rabbi should be niftar so that he can be freed of this burden or this pain. But the rabbanon would not stop davening. So the Rabbanan would not stop davening so that Rabbi would not pass away. He was staying alive because their tefillos were succeeding. So she does something here. Shakla kuza. She takes a pitcher, earthenware pitcher. Shadim igul la'aro. She threw it off the roof down to the ground below. Ishtiku mirachme. The shock silenced them from davening for a second. V'nach nafshe de Rabbi. And Rabbi passes away. So this is a... This Gemara is one of the sources that's used on both sides of the controversy. I say about euthanasia with quality of life and mercy killings, the idea of allowing someone to pass away or helping them pass away in order to prevent the pain. Because you see here that Rabbi was in pain. And what did his shifcha do? She went ahead and she helped him, you know, in some sense die. So one side says, well, you see that the Chachamim did not agree. The Chachamim continued to daven for Rabbi, and they did not allow Rabbi to pass away. So that's a proof that one is not allowed to kill or help someone die or accelerate their death in order to improve their, because of their quality of life or because of the pain that they're found in. So that's the one side. The other side, and which is a strong side from the way the Gemara is written, that in general, I say this in the Torah, also over here, maybe that whoever gets in the last word, maybe the Gemara doesn't necessarily disagree with him. So Rabbi's maidservant did something, and you don't see the Gemara criticizing her action. The Gemara leaves her action hanging. That's the last statement of the Gemara here, and does not criticize what she did. They just tell the story. And I said before that the Amte Rabbi was well-versed, that she was respected, and her opinions were respected in many other places. And over here you see also the Amte the Rabbi. The Gemara tells the story, and then at the end does not say she shouldn't have done this, or reject the position that she took. So that's a support for those that believe that these types of killings or accelerating of death or quality of life issues are valid. The last point that one can make is that maybe here it's different than in general, that what she did was not active, but right, rather she was it's almost like she created a sheva al tase. The chachamim were davening, and then she stopped them from davening, meaning she interrupted their davening. She didn't do anything physical or anything to accelerate his death. She just took away something that was preventing his death. So that's, again, comes into a major issues today in the post-gym about number one, quality of life, where quality of life matters at all in types of these decisions, and when can we make decisions to not continue to treat someone or remove treatment from a person in order that they should pass away because the pain is too great. And also with issues with regards to tefillah, is one allowed to daven that someone should pass away? I mean, that we always daven for refuah shleima, we daven for someone to be better. Can you actually daven that Hashem should have rachamim on a person that should be able to pass away to be out of that pain? So this sugya is one of major source in any of these controversies because of what the chachamim did and what Amte the Rabbi did. Okay, Amrulei Rabbanan Lebar Kapara Zil Ayin. So the Rabbanan didn't want to go inside. They didn't want to go see Rabbi. They didn't want to know what really happened. So they said to Bar Kapara, Zil Ayin, go check out what happened. Azal Ashke Denach Nafshe. He saw that Rabbi had passed away. It was he had passed away in that period. Kare Lulavushe. So he tore Kriya, like one would do over a Talmud Chacham. The Hadre the Kare Lachare. Then he turns his rip, the tear away from him. Lachare. Patach V'amar. So he turned his rip away so that the chacham wouldn't recognize that he had torn kriya over Rabbi. Then he went back to the chacham and says, "Patach v'amar ar elim umetzukim achzu ba'aron hakodesh." The ar elim, which are the is a euphemism here for malachim, and the tzukim, which are the peaks, the chachamim achzu ba'aron hakodesh. They're both grabbing onto the aron hakodesh, and the nitzchu ar elim etem tzukim. The Malachim were successful at beating the Mitzukim. Benishba Arona Kodesh. And the Arona Kodesh was taken captive. Right, which is that's funny, I just came to my mind, but that the Medrash by Moshe Rabbeinu says, Allah Lamarom, Benishba Medrashevi, that when Moshe went up above, there was machlokes between the Malachim and Moshe, whether Moshe should be able to take the Torah or not. Who does the Torah belong to? Does it belong to Elyonim, or should belong to Moshe Rabbeinu? And they're determined to heal him is Benishma Menu Shevi, that he took a Shevi, he took a captive. So bringing down the Torah was a captive. So also over here, the term that Rebbe, who was the Torah of Klal Yisrael, was taken captive by the Malachim. So Amrulei, they said to him, Nach Nafshei, he passed away. So Amar Lahu, Atun Kamritu, Ana Lo Kamina. You said that, I didn't say that. Meaning that he wasn't, again, first of all, to respect that no one's allowed to say that Rebbe passed away. So he wasn't going to explicitly say it. He was only hinting at his death through his words. And again, that's a number of issues. One about the being a bearer of bad news. Can one directly give over bad news? In general, we see this in the Gemara that when they're talking about someone who passed away, they do it through hints. We had that by Rabbi Chia. By Rav and Rav Chia, by whether Aibo v'Imo Kayam, whether his mother and father were alive, and there it's Machlokes and Rishon, whether it's Rav or Rav Chia, his parents are talking about. But when he asked him, "Is my mother alive?" he said to him, "Well, why don't you ask him about your father? If my father's alive," and he says, "Why don't you ask my mother?" He never gave him the news directly that both of them had passed away, but by telling him to ask about the other person, he understood from himself that his parents had passed away. So again, this idea not of not giving directly bad news, but of hinting to the news rather than giving direct bad news. And also the idea that the unwillingness to accept the fact that Rabbi had passed away, both from a push-up shot standpoint that was too great to bear, and number two, from a, you know, a more spiritual standpoint, the idea that Rabbi wasn't really dead. He was, his physical body had gone, but he was still alive inside of his neshama, and that which he had taught, his Torah, was going to live on. Right, b'shat tiratosh Rabbi Zakaf Ezer Etzvot Kalfi Malus. When Rabbi was passing away, he raised up his 10 fingers. Upwards, Amar Ribono Shalom, Galui Ve'adua Lefenecha Shegati Ve'eser Etzbotai B'Torah, that with my 10 Etzbot, I was Yegah B'Torah, Lo Ne'eneti Apilu Be'etzba Ketana, and I didn't get Hano, even from the smallest amount, I got no Hano, I did everything, L'Shem Shemayim, and I did it, for the Torah. So that's Tosas brings down a medrash over here. Interesting medrash. Amina medrash. Asha adam itpalel shikanes l'torah l'toch gufo. Right, a person just should daven that he gets Torah into his body. Itpalel shikanes l'adanim l'toch gufo. She also daven that that these pleasures should not enter his body. I mean that the one should dedicate their body to the spiritual means. This is interesting in general that Rabbi was very wealthy and he was not poor. In the Gemara in other places describes that Rabbi had a good relationship with the civil government at the time, and that he used to always have food on his table and was an enemy olam hazeh. So to reconcile these gemaras, you shouldn't deal with the fact that one even does not have to be an ascetic or ascetic to be ola lamaro, meaning in a sense, but even someone of a greater heights is someone who's mekadesh the olam hazeh to the level of kedusha. Right? That's one of the during the Middle Ages, one of the big issues with the that brought to the Hasidus in the early Rishonim, there's definitely a flow or a school of asceticism, which is reducing one's pleasure in olam hazeh, not getting any benefit, living a life of starkness and I wouldn't say necessarily poverty, but of not getting pleasures in this world. Whereas that went and was probably the mainstream of much of European Jewry. In many senses, and then the Hasidism tries, to, in many ways, went the opposite extreme, but again tries to reignite the idea of being mekadesh olam hazeh, that one does not have to be in a right. One does not have to reject all of olam hazeh in order to succeed in Torah, but rather there's also the tzad that one can take olam hazeh and be mekadesh olam hazeh, so that even if they do get pleasure olam hazeh, it should be done in a way that is elevates that which is here, rather than shuns that which is in olam hazeh. Yiratzon milfanecha she shalom b'menuchati. So Rebbe says that yiratzon that I should be shalom in my rest place. I should be at peace when I come to rest. Yatz de b'kol b'akol amar yavo shalom yanuchu al mishkevotam. So this is a famous pasuk from Yeshaya that we say at kavuros that you hear many times at kavuros. He says yavo shalom. Yanuchu should come in peace. Yanuchu mishkevotam. They should rest on their beds. So now yanuchu is in plural, and so is mishkevotam. So yanuchu, one could explain about the guf and the neshama, but al mishkevotam on their beds, that's in plural. That's not, you can't explain that. So that's what Gemara says. Al mishkevacha miboyle. Should have said on the singular a bed, not beds. So misayle Rav Chiya bar Gamda. So this is similar to what Rav Chiya, or approved to a support to that which Rav Chiya bar Gamda said. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Gamda. Amar Rabbi Yosi ben Shaul. Pshar she tzaddik niftar me aolam. We're umrim. Malachi Asher is when a tzaddik passes away. The Malachi Asher is saying lifnei Hakadosh Baruch Hu ribono shalom tzaddik ploni ba. They're announcing that here comes, you know, they're blowing the trumpets and here comes the tzaddik. Amar lahem yavo tzaddikim yitzu likrato. All the tzaddikim should come out and greet him as he comes up to Olam Haba. From Rimlo, Yavo, Bishalom, he should come in peace. Yanuchu al mishkevotam, they should rest on their beds. Why is the beds in plural now? Because the other tzaddikim have come to greet him. Since the other tzaddikim have come to greet him, now Yanuchu al mishkevotam means that they should all rest together, go back and rest together. So that's why a famous pasuk is that we say that is said at Levayot or at Kavurot. Amar Rabbi Elazar b'shasha tzaddik niftar min olam shalosh kitot shal malachei asher yotzot likroto, that when a person passes away, there are three groups of angels that go out to greet him. So they Achad Omer Lo. The girsa in front of us is Bo B'Shalom. You see on the side that there's a girsa Yavo B'Shalom, which would make more sense because they're quoting the pasuk. The pasuk that we just read is Yavo Shalom. Yavo B'Shalom. V'Achad Omer. The second one says Holoch Holeich Nichecho, which is the end of that pasuk. The end of the pasuk of Yavo Shalom Yenucha B'Shkodam is Holeich Nichecho, that they should walk in parallel or next to them. Chad Omer Lo Yavo Shalom. And the last one says Yavo Shalom Yenucha B'Shkivotam. So you have the three kitot that are all greeting him, and each one saying a piece, it looks like, of this pasuk over here. Now, what this represents possibly is that the three different stages in which a person is in. A person has the guf, which is down here in Olam Hazeh. They have a neshama that goes up above, and then they have ruach that connects between the two. And that the shlosh kitot of malachim might be addressing each one of those levels of the person that. Bo B'Shalom is the neshama that's coming. Halo Nichecho, that should be running parallel, they should walk in parallel, is the ruach, right, that it's in. And then Yanucha Mishkavotam should be the guf, should rest on its bed. So each of these represent the different aspects of the person, and each is addressing that the person should come b'shlemus, right, in each of these areas. Shasha Rasha Nevad Min Olam, when Rasha passes away, so again, parallel to the tzaddik that has three kitot, the three kitot of malachim that come out, malachei kabbalah, right, destructive malachim that come out to greet them. Ha'ad omeret ein shalom. One of them says that there is no shalom. Amar Hashem, ein shalom, amar Hashem l'rishayim. That Hashem says to the rishayim. The pasuk appears twice in Yishayahu. Appears once in Perek Mem Chet. And pasuk of bed there it says in shalom amar Hashem l'rishayim, which is what's in our Gemara in Perek Nun Zayin, where the previous pasuk is from Yavo Shalom, the one we darshan above Yishol Minucha Mishkotav. The pasuk appears again in Perek Nun Zayin, and there it says in shalom amar Elokai l'rishayim. So whether it should say amar Hashem or amar Elokai would depend which pasuk you're quoting. That those that push to say it's towards Din Zayin, because there it's talking about Klal Yisrael, whereas by, I think, in Perek Memchet, it's talking about, I can't remember if it was talking about Bavel or Mitzrayim, so there may not be the appropriate location. So the quoting of the puzzle depends on which context you're looking at it, which of those two parakim. But either way, it's saying, In Shalom Amar Shem L'Rishayim, that they will not have peace, that the Neshamot will not reach that, again, if in parallel to what we said by Tzadikim, the Neshamot will not reach a level of peace. Right, that the one who caused pain will be laid down. Go down, push down or go down, vashkavat arilim, and lay down to rest the arilim, those that rejected Hashem. So again, the three levels of the Rasha where he will not reach Shlemus. All of these ideas that he's both in the Shlemus Aguf, the Shlemus Neshama, and the Shlemus Ruach, then all of these areas that the Rasha is unable to reach the level of Shlemut, and that's what the Gemara is quoting, the three Malachi Chabalah come to greet him, and quote the Psukim that refer to a uneasiness or in Shalom, that there is no peace in these areas. Right, that ends the Ikarata. I will point out one thing that we missed yesterday. I should have pointed out yesterday, but there's an amazing line in Tosfos. That yesterday when it says that when Rebbe died, butla kedusha, kedusha went away. The Gemara quoted it with regards to Rukhiya, saying that, and the Gemara wants to flip the brisa around. But in the end, Rebbe's the one who said that that the Rukhiya said about Rebbe when he passed away, there was butla kedusha. What does it mean, butla kedusha? It's a simple interpretation is that Rabbeinu Hakadosh, right, as we call him, Rabbeinu Hakadosh. So therefore, when he passed away, butla kedusha. He was a representative. He was the one who represented kedusha. Many sense that he had a kobo, he had yiras chait, he had chokhmah. We saw that what he was trying to give over to his children, and he had nesius, and all these in him, and therefore he was kadosh when he passed away. But la kedusha, that wasn't such a thing found anymore. But the Tosfos brings down an interesting interpretation of but la kedusha. He brings down from yesterday. He brings from a Rab Chaim Kohen. The Rab Chaim Kohen haya omer. It's in the last Tosfos on the previous Amud. If you want to look at it, it says a Rab Chaim Kohen haya omer. It's in the second Tosfos, also Yom Shemes Rabbi. It's about halfway down in the Tosfos. Rabbi Chaim Kohen Yomer, Yimalei Haiti, Kishenifta Rabbeinu Tam. Had I been around when Rabbeinu Tam passed away? So he's saying the equivalent about Rabbeinu Tam that about Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Haiti Mitamei Lo. I would have been Mitamei for him. The high Batela Kedusha, the Kamar Hocha Hainu Kedusha's Kihuna. He says an unbelievable thing here. He says that when a tzaddik passes away, we say Batla Kedusha. What does it mean, Batla Kedusha? That Batla Kedusha means Kedusha's Kohanim. That the Kohanim are we're Matir Kohanim to be Mitame for a tzaddik on the day of his death. Just the day of his Ptira. So they're allowed to be Mitame for a tzaddik because this statement of Batla Kedusha. So he says, had he been around at the time that Rabbeinu Tam passed away, he would have been Mitame himself as a Kohen. He would have been Mitame himself to take care of, to be Shamesh or Kavod Rabbeinu Tam, because when Rabbeinu Tam passed away, it was Batla Kedusha, just like when Rebbe was passed away, it was Batla Kedusha. V'chein Muchach, V'damar Oto Yom. So it sounds like that was only on that day, Mashma Oto Yom Davka, but too low, that the Kedusha was only lost on that day. I mean, if it was because Rabbeinu HaKadosh had passed away, then it should be something that was from there on after. But why did they say Oto Ayom on that day?
They
said there's no kuhuna that day. So he's near the rabbi, which I think is talking about the re, but he says, my rabbi doesn't agree with this. When Duma the rabbi, the hayatam, my re, betumas base of Paris, the rabbi, past the rabbana. That the suspension of kuhuna, of tuma for kuhuna, is only going to a tuma de rabbanan, but not tuma de oraisa. But you see that this Rabbi Rav Chaim was willing to take this story of the Agadata, the Batla Kedusha, and say that even Min HaTorah, a Kohen could be Metame to a mace, which is an incredible assumption, and he would have been willing to do that, not only for Rabbeinu HaKadosh, but he would only have willing to do it for Rabbeinu Tam as well. Just we didn't get a chance, it was late yesterday, we were running out of time, but just an amazing Tosfos about Rabbeinu Tam. All right, we'll start the new Mishnah. We just finished the Agadata. We're at the Mishnah, the new Sugya, that'll get us to the end of the parak here. Alright, if she's in her father's house and getting mizonos there, then she can get, collect her ksuba forever. But if she's in her husband's house, then she can only be goba until 25 years. After 25 years, we assume sheyesh b'kafei shanim shetasa toba k'neged tubasa divrei Rabbi Meir. Meir believes that after 25 years, when she lives in the house, she's benefited enough from the estate to wipe out her ksuba. Meaning that if, when she's in her father's house, she's getting no benefit from the estate, she's simply getting her mizonos, thereby she's entitled to her ksuba forever. Whereas in the estate, she will take, she gets her mizonos, but she also gets bonuses and benefits from being there in the house of her husband, and those bonuses and benefits after 25 years will equal out to her ksuba, and thereby she can no longer collect her ksuba.
It's funny, because we said previously that when she's, that the Havnat, they could say to her, if you're with us, then we'll be nizonin you. But if not, then we won't. Is that it's more economically efficient for them to feed her when
all
she's.
All right. So that's the next line in the Mishnah. Very good. So that's the Rabbi Meir Shemim Shim Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Chamim Omrim Kozmachi Bebeit Balo Govik Subasa Aliol. If she's in her husband's house, then she can take her ksuba forever. Kozmachi Bebeit Avia Govik Subasa Adesrim Chamishoni. But when she goes home, she can only take it for 25 years. Meita, so the Chum say just the opposite, which would go along with what the Gemara said above, so that they say that when she's in the house of the Yisum, she can collect forever. When she's in the house of her husband, she can't collect. Meita, Yorshim, Azkirim, Ksubasa, Adesrim, Chameshonim. If she passes away, her Yorshim can have a 25-year statute of limitations also to collect on her Ksuba. So Amar Leah Bai, Rabbi Yosef, Aniya, Shabi Yisrael, Adesrim, Chameshonim, Umarta, Bat Baitus, Adesrim, Chameshonim. That you said, Rabbi Meir said that it takes 25 years to eat up your ksuba. Now, you have the poorest woman in Klal Yisrael and Marta Baitus, who we've seen a number of times through ksubas, had a massive ksuba. How could you say they both could eat their ksuba up over 25 years? They have significantly different sums in their ksuba, and how could you argue that one of them believes, Rabbi Meir believes that both of them over 25 years will complete their, or eat up their ksuba? So that Gemara says, that's not a problem. According to the size of the gamal is the load. Meaning that, just like the example that Rashi gives about eating up stuff from the house, is that she'll lend bread and salt to her neighbors. That she does little tovot that from the estate that will eat up over time into a ksuba. So those tovot, again, would be commensurate with the living style of the individual. And a poor woman is only going to give away so much to her friends, is only going to spend so much because they are poor. Right? Whereas a wealthy woman, when they give it away, it's less meaningful to her to give away larger sums or to give away more, and therefore she will, on a proportional basis over the 25 years, she will eat her ksuba equally between an aniya and a ashira. That's what Rabbi Yossi says according to Rabbi Meir. Vayelu Rabbi Meir, mahu shetish alesh teku. According to Rabbi Meir, do we depreciate or amortize the life of the ksuba? Meaning that, is it a linear relationship that over the 25 years, if after 12 and a half years she leaves, do we say that she's lost half her ksuba? Or do we say simply at the end of 25 years she loses her entire ksuba, until that point she can collect her ksuba? That the Gemara leaves as a teiko. It's not clear from Rabbi Meir whether this is a linear amortization for ksuba, that meaning that every year she uses up 1/25 of her ksuba, and at the end of 25 years she has nothing, or is it a cliff? It's a balloon payment at the end, meaning that until the 25th year she's entitled to collect everything, otherwise it goes away at the 25th year. So let's understand the Chachamim's position. By the Rabbi Yosef, atay kodem shkiyas chama gobek subas, lach shkiyas chama lo gobek subas. Right, so meaning that, why at the 25th year? Meaning that at that point, that's the statute of limitations. You know, a minute before, right before sunset, she can collect her ksuba. Right after sunset, she can't collect her ksuba. So it says back to him, vay purta achilto. In that small amount, she was mochel her ksuba in that moment. So I'm like, yeah. Kol midas chachamim ken he. I mean, that's by definition. If you have a boundary, if you have a time limit, there's always going to be a point of time where it's yes, and a point of time when it's no. We have this, the Gemara quotes this in many places, but the idea that what? That the Midas Chacham are like this. There's a point, and that when it's at this point, it's good. When it's at that point, it's not. Like a mikveh. Mikveh that has 40 saw in it, that's a kosher mikveh. If you have 40 saw minus a tiny amount, minus a kortuv, that's not a kosher mikveh, and that's not going to work. I mean, they have to have a cutoff point. There has to be a point where you cut off.
That's not like a good analogy, though, because, like, with, by mikveh, what are you going to do? She'll tell the 3/4 of her body. Like, but here, you could reduce the amount. In other words, you could the same idea as prorating the ksuba, right? You know, it's like.
So that works according to Rabbi Meir. You're right. That would work in the Gemara. I did ask that according to Rabbi Meir. According to Chachamim, the problem here is not proration, but mechila. And by mechila, it's either full mechila or a part, or no mechila. So here it's a black and white.
It is a good analogy.
Right. Samar Yudam Rab. Hey, Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi lifnei Rabbi. Shamar Mishum Aviv, Lo Shano El Shishtark Tuba Yotze Mitachet Yadeha. Right, that's only when the Shtark Suba is not in existence. I mean, this 25 years time limit is only when there's no Ksuba. But Shtark Suba Yotze Mitachet Yadeha Gova Ksuba Tali Olam. Then she can be Govad the Ksuba forever. Rabbi Lazar Amar, Afilu Shtark Suba Yotze Mitachet Yadeha, even if she has the Shtark Suba, Ina Govad Alad Yisrim Mechamei Shanim. She only has until 25 years. So just explain this Shita's Chachamim. Rabbi Meir's Shita we understand, which is that when she's in her father's house, she's not taking any value of her ksuba out, and therefore she can claim her ksuba forever. Whereas when she's in the estate, she eats a value equivalent to her ksuba, and therefore she doesn't have a right to collect her ksuba afterwards when she stays in the estate. Chum say just the opposite, but not for Rabbi Meir's reasons. They say it's an issue of mechila, that when she's living in the estate, right, why doesn't she want to collect her ksuba? Because she's embarrassed. She's too embarrassed to ask for a ksuba because she's benefiting from the estate. She's the yisomim are there. Everything's in front of her. So therefore, when she is there for 25 years and didn't ask for it, that's because she has busha to ask for it. And therefore, we don't consider it an implicit mechila that she didn't ask for a ksuba over the 25 years. Whereas when she's living with her father's house, then after 25 years, if she didn't ask for a ksuba, there's no reason for her to be embarrassed. Right, because she's living in her father's house. She doesn't have an interaction with the Yisomim. So she could ask for a ksuba. It doesn't change anything with their relationship. And therefore, if after 25 years she does not ask for a ksuba, we assume there was an implicit mechila in her not asking for a ksuba, and she's mochel the ksuba. So the Gemara says over here, qualifies that mechila. When we say that 25 years of statute of limitations, that is a implicit mechila, that's only when what? She does not have the shtar ksuba. Because her reason to claim the ksuba is she has eidim, she has so on and so forth. The fact that she didn't come forward without a shtar ksuba ready means that she basically said, I'm not going to get it, I don't care. But when she has a shtar ksuba and she can pull out the actual shtar, she's never mochel, because she knows she has a document that can get her the money. When she has the document that has the money, she doesn't feel obligated or compelled to go and ask for the ksuba, because she can always pull out the documents. That's what the commentator says. No, that implicit mechila is a time factor. that over 25 years, if she doesn't make a claim, even if she has to document, it means that she doesn't intend to make the claim, and she's mochel on her claim as a ksuba. So now the Gemara is going to challenge a number of times, going to challenge the position of Rabbi Elazar.
What about a place where they didn't write a ksuba?
Right, so then definitely, then there's only one option, right?
She doesn't have
that. Yeah, 25 years, right.
It's not treated differently because there's an absence of the star all along.
Right, I mean, she might be able to, because then you could say that if she brings Adim that she came from a place where they don't write ksuba, then the obligation's on him to show she didn't. But here, it seems like there's mechila, and that she would have to have gone to Basin to get the document approved or something beforehand with her get. She has to go or do something that would show that she's not mechila. Right, Mesiv Rav Sheshes, Bachov Gova Shlo B'Hazkara. Right, a Bachov can come and collect without mentioning anything. Heichi Dami, what does that mean? Idu Lo Nakit Shtara B'Mai Gavi. If he doesn't have a shtar, what's he coming to collect with? I mean, here's a Bachov, he says you owe me money, and he's showing up. What is it? It's not meaningful unless there's a shtar. Elo Nakit Shtara. Right, and that he has a document in hand. Ubachovu dulo barachulehu. A bachov never is mochel his loan. Right, therefore, what when he shows up with the document, he's not mochel. He can collect forever. Ha amana achiltahu, achilta. But an amana would be mochel, and therefore, even if she has the document, right, therefore she would be mochel even when the face of a document. So would support Rabbi Elazar's vision. So he says, "Who motive law, but who mefarik law?" He asked the question. He answered it. Over here, it's the way he doesn't have a shtar. It's not a case where he has a document, but rather where the debtor agrees that he owns the money. So therefore, we say there's no statute of limitations. If everybody agrees that there was a loan, and the loan is still in existence, there was never repayment of loan because the debtor agrees to it and the creditor agrees to it, we say that there is no problem in collecting the loan. Bahama Rabbi Loss, again, we're going to challenge again. Shonim Gerusha Harihik Bachol.
We say the same thing with the Ksuba, though. Even if there's no shtar, if everybody agrees that there is, that she had a Ksuba, regardless of whether or not she has an actual shtar, why is there a statute of limitations?
Because I guess the point is that she should have come forward. The fact that she hasn't come forward over the 25 years means that the Gemara believes that a Bachov will never be mochel on his loan. He has no reason to be mochel on his loan, whereas a Almana maybe has other incentives to be mochel on her ksuba, meaning that either she doesn't need it, or she doesn't want it. The children, she doesn't want to take the money out of the estate. There are reasons to. There are ulterior motives where she might be mochel on the ksuba. Yeah.
Rashi says, "Almana bas acholi shenanes mehen kol hashana malalu ksubasa ina milvav lechisra b'almana." She's been receiving something along
for
25 years.
She's been entitled to mezonos over the 25 years.
As opposed to Bachov, who got nothing. So there's more reason to think that she would be willing to be.
She's entitled. Well, she doesn't take ksuba. She's entitled to mezonos. So the fact that she did take mezonos, she did get. So there are reasons that she would be mochel, where Bachov would not be mochel. So that's the Gemara's assumption. Gemara and rejects it and says that the Bachov and the Ksuba will be the same, and if they have a document that can come without a document, we assume that they have been mochel. Alright, Amar Rabbi Allah shown him Grusha Ariki Bachov Bachov. A Grusha is equivalent to a Bachov. Hey Chidami, what's the case? Ida Lunaki Ksuba Vemai Gavi. What does it mean a Grusha? Grusha is coming to collect her Ksuba. If she doesn't have a Ksuba, what's she coming to collect with? El Alav the Nikita Ksuba. Hey, that she has a Ksuba. But Grusha Ida La Basachulehi. That only a divorcee who has a document does not be mochel. How amona achilto? But if she was a widow, she would have been mochel. So the Gemara says, hachanami kishachaya mode. No, this again, we're a case where all the parties agree. The divorcee, the husband, and the wife agree that there was a divorce and there was never a ksuba paid out. And that's why they pay out the ksuba over here. So it doesn't have to be a case where they have a document and it's not a proof to our case about whether having ksuba or not having a ksuba will have any meaning. I'm Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Tani Rav Yehuda Bar Kaza, but Masnisin de Beit Kaza. Tava ksuba. So if she asks for a ksuba, harihi kabitchila, it resets the statute of limitations. She has a document, then she can collect forever. So this sounds like the chachamim. Number one, that's one qualification, which is that with a qualifying statement that the 25-year statute of limitations resets every time she asks for her ksuba. Number one. Number two is that if she holds the ksuba document, she's able to collect forever. Shalklei Rav Nachman bar Rav Chisda, Rav Nachman bar Yaakov, Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu, Kishishtar Ktuba Yotzim Mitach Yada, Machlokes, Right? Where is the machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim? Is it only when she has the shtar ksuba, or even when she doesn't have a shtar ksuba? Halacha kedivrei Rabbi Meir, and who is the halacha like in our Mishnah between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim? Shachlei b'she'ein shtar ksuba yachsei mitachi yado machlokes. Machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi in the previous Mishnah or Braisa is, I mean the previous Braisa is when she does not have a shtar ksuba. But if if she has a shtar ksuba, everybody agrees that she can collect forever. The machlokas in our mission between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, the halacha is the like the divrei Chachamim. The halacha is like the Chachamim who say that when she's in her father's house, she's mochel after 25 years. When she's in the estate, she's not mochel the olam.
Or they ask the question of the whom the halacha follows. I mean, we have general rules, right? Rabbi Meir against Chachamim, the halacha would be like Chachamim, wouldn't be like Rabbi Meir,
right?
So, like, it seems rather like there must have been some reason that they would have thought that the halacha
was like Rabbi Meir. Yeah. Let's just see here. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe because he gives a svara in the Mishnah. Possibly because he gives a svara in the Mishnah. If he gives a svara, sometimes we pass him if he gives a clear svara to what he's saying. Right, but I agree with you. I mean, it seems like it should be obvious that the halacha goes halacha kichachamim because you have rabbi v'yoch and the halacha is like the rabbi. It's a good question. All right. Kiyata Rav Dima Rav Shimon Pazim Rav Shub and Levi Mishum Bar Kapara Lo Shanu Ela Mano Matayim. This whole point of whether she's mochel or not is only talking about the 100 and 200, the core ksuba. Abu Tosefet Yeshla, but the Tosefet ksuba that was a present, and therefore she does not give up on that. Rav Bevam Rav Yochanan feel Tosefet Inla, even the extra part of the ksuba she doesn't have from her. So you have three parts of the ksuba. You have the core ksuba, you have Tosefet ksuba, and Nidunya. Right, so with regards to Nidunyosa, I think everybody agrees that she does not mochel because that's property she brought into the marriage and she wants to get that out. There's no reason to believe that she would be mochel on that. The only question is with regards to the core ksuba and the Tosefet ksuba. Right, so everybody agrees that the core ksuba she has mechila over the core ksuba. Right, that's, again, in a point where she does have mechila, that's over the core ksuba. The machlok is here, it's between the Tosefet. Is the Tosefet a gift, and therefore she expects to collect no matter what? Or do we say even the Tosefet Ksuba goes like the Ksuba? Why? The Amar Rabbi Ayba, Amar Rabbi Yana, it's not Ksuba, Ksuba Dami. Those things that are part of the Ksuba act like the Ksuba. So just like the Ksuba, she's Mochalan, she's also Mochalan, the extensions of the Ksuba. Imar Nami, Amar Abav, Amar Ravuna, Amar Rav, Lo Shana, Lo Mano Matayim, O Tosefet Yeshla, right? That we, she gets the Kork Ksuba, but not the Tosefet, she's Mochal on the Kork Ksuba, but not Mochal on the extra piece. Amar Lei Rabbi Abba, the Ravuna, Amar Rav, Hachi Amar Lei. Did Rav really say this? So Ishtikan Kamart or Ishkayan Kamart? When you asking me, did Rav really make this statement? Are you saying to me, Ishtakin, that what, either fix it or silence it, meaning that don't say it over again because it's wrong? I mean, why are you questioning whether Rav said such a statement? Is it because you want me to silence it, you disagree with it, and you want to silence it? Or Ashkin Kamart, you want to give me a drink, meaning give me a drink means, you know, toast me for giving you such a good memro, or, you know, drink for the joy of the positive side of it, which is that you want to know that Rav really said this because you want to uphold the memro of Rav.
It's like, give the man a cigar.
Right. So I'm like, you stick in, come on. I mean, I was thinking about disagreeing with Rav. I was thinking that maybe that's not the right thing. And that's, the Gemara leaves it inconclusive here about the Tosefet Ksuba. I just make sure I read it. Amalei Rabbi Abba Rav Huna. Amar Rav Hachi. Did Rav really say such a statement? So that's the question of the Gemara. And then he says, are you asking me the question either to uphold it or to reject it? All right, here's an interesting case coming up. So you have quick here. Chamate de Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia Arika's mother-in-law. Right? We're talking about Rabbi Chia Arika's mother-in-law. In Tatachua Havei was his brother's wife. Right? So his mother-in-law was his brother's wife. So you would have thought he married his niece, right? I mean, that would be the simplest situation here, is that he married his niece. Because his brother's wife has a daughter, and then he marries his niece, so then his brother's wife is his mother-in-law, right? That would be the simple case. The problem is that she was childless with his brother, all right? So they didn't have children. So he didn't marry his niece, but he must have, this woman that his brother married must have had a daughter from a previous marriage. So she has a daughter from a previous marriage. So his mother-in-law was his brother's wife. So basically, he married his brother's stepdaughter. Right? He married his brother's stepdaughter, and therefore his brother's wife is his mother-in-law. All right? It's a little complicated, but hopefully that should work. All right. She would live by her father's house. She did not stay by the estate. Vizana esrim b'chamei shanim, and he took b'vein asa. He took over her money. He took her mizonos to her for 25 years. He basically went there. So far, Marley Abli Mizoni. Give me my mizonos. He said, what do you mean? He goes, first of all, Amar Law, Leislach Mizoni. First of all, you have no mizonos because I've been giving you mizonos for the last 25 years, so everything's good. Havli Ksuba. Give me my Ksuba then. So Amar Law, Lo Mizoni Yislach, Lo Ksuba Yislach. You don't get a Ksuba and you don't get mizonos. Why? Because he felt after 25 years, is what? According to Chachamim, there's Mechila in her father's house. So therefore, she was not entitled to Mizonos now and not entitled to Ksuba. She'd been receiving Mizonos all along. He'd bring her Mizonos, so she wasn't entitled to Mizonos anymore. And number two is she claimed her Ksuba. She's making a claim her Ksuba. She's already Mochel her Ksuba because it's now after 25 years. So she wasn't going to stand for this. So Tavati Ladina, Kameh the Rabba Bar Shila. She took him to a Beis Din. He says to me, Izzy, a reference to Talmud Chacham, says to Rabbi Arika, you know, basically, tell me what happened, what's happening here. Zanita, I took her food, I fed her, personally took her food over there for 25 years. And I took it on my shoulder, meaning that, you know, with your life, and he says, basically swearing that I carried on my shoulder, I carried that food over there for 25 years so that she should eat. What was the reasoning of the Chachamim that when she lived in the estate that she can collect her ksuba for olam? The reason she didn't claim her ksuba is because she's embarrassed because of the anoa that she's getting from the estate and the fact that she's staying in the estate. She's embarrassed to ask for her ksuba. So he says, why was over the last 25 years she didn't ask for ksuba? Because you were bringing her food every day. She felt uncomfortable asking for her ksuba. So the same reasoning that goes into the fact that what we don't say it's an implicit mechila when she lives in the estate, we could apply over here too. Because you didn't just send the food over there. You went personally to take it over there. And therefore she was embarrassed to claim her ksuba. Zil havlo. He says, go give her her ksuba. Lo ashkach. He didn't listen. He didn't listen. Katav lo adrachta nichse. He wrote for her a shtar, a document of collection from Beis Din to go after his property to collect the ksuba. So then, of course, when you don't like the psak, after Rav Chiya came to Rabba, he went before another Beis Din. Right? He went to Rabba. I'm like, Chazi Mar Heichadana. Do you see how Rabba Bar Shila was done? Odi, I'm like, Shapir Danach. He says he did a good job. I'm like, Yochi Liza Lahate Le Peiris. The woman says, now I got. Not only do I have Rabba Bar Shila, I have Rabba on my hands, and now I have a Shtar Drachta. And the way a Shtar Drachta works is that once Beis Din gives him her rights to go in and get the property, she can collect back. She can collect back payros from the point of time that the Beis Din gave her the shtar. So that means that she's saying, oh, you know what? He didn't. When I got the shtar drachta, he didn't give me the property. He's been eating the payros since then. He not only has to give me the property, he has to give me the payros. She should pay me out the payros from the day I got this collection document till today.
She's gotten over her embarrassment, apparently.
Exactly. Well, after she got that psak that undermined him, she was feeling pretty bold. So then Rava says, let me see your document over here. He saw that the adrachta was written improperly. And it was missing a single line in the adrachta, which is what? That you can only collect out of the nechasim of the mace. I mean, she's entitled to collect her adrachta not from all the property of Rabbi Chia Arichta, but only from his brother's property that he inherited. His brother didn't have any children, therefore he inherited the property of his brother. Since he inherited the property of his brother, she can only collect from that property. That line was missing from the adrachta. So his posel, Amalah, adrachta lav shapir ksiba. She says that this adrachta was not written properly, and therefore your adrachta is no longer valid. Should have just kept her mouth shut, she would have gotten the property, right? So Amrale Tizel Adrachta. Forget about the Adrachta. Ishkil Miyomad Ashlimi, Yomad Achrasta. Ad hashta. She goes, all right, fine. I'm not going to collect on from the day that the adrakta was gone, but I'll collect when Beis Din goes out afterwards when they have adrakta. They make an announcement to sell the property. They have to auction the property. So she says, fine, that I should collect the payers from the day the auction ended until today. Because the fact that they were machwis on the property means that the property is going to be sold. From the day that it's over, at least I should collect from that, even if the document's not valid. The only time you can collect from after Beis Din's announcement about the auction is when the adrakta, when the document is valid. So you have nothing because you have an invalid adrakta, therefore the auction of Beis Din is also invalidated because they were doing it on the premise of the adrakta. Since they don't have an adrakta, the auction is also invalid. So you can see that she was an educated woman. Aren't you the one who said that when a document comes out, you have a loan document, or you have a sale document, and it's missing recourse in the document, right? There's no achrayut, there's no recourse in the document. That is a mistake. We assume the sofer made a mistake and left it out, that there really was recourse in any loan, or there was recourse in any sale, and the omission of the achrayut is what? Is the... So, tell us the sofer. So if that's true... Yish is also over here. He left this line out of the adrakta. Let's assume it was a tov sofer. That the Beis Din really told them to write in this line. And the sofer mistook it and didn't write the line in there. Amar la Rava, but how likely Amar a tov sofer here? No. This case is different. Here you can't say it was a mistake of the sofer. Why? Da afilu Rabba Bashila Tali. Who was the one who made the mistake? It was Rabba Bashila and his Beis Din that made the mistake. And he even made the mistake. Why? Mikara hu sofer hani vani didei. That, and who cares which property we collect from? Whether it's his property or the property of the mace. Either way, it's his property now, and he's going to lose. So they write the address to any property. Mali Mahani. What do we care if we take from his or the other ones? Velohi. And we don't say this. Why? Zim Dazla Mashablich Aluhu. Because if we give her, she goes in and grabs the property of Rav Chiya Rika. And then it goes ahead, and what? She invests in that property. In the meantime, Chia Rika does not invest in the property he inherited from her brother. And then he comes around and he says, Shokyo didach fahav li didi. You know what? You're right. In the end, take the property. You were right to get the ksuba. Take your husband's property, and I'll take my property back. So now what are you going to have? You're going to have a point where the woman invested in the property. He's going to take it back as his property and give her the property of his brother, or the property he inherited, and that's going to be underinvested property. And the Beis Din's going to look bad because they're going to say, look, this Beis Din didn't take care of this woman. Here she went and invested all in this property. In the end, it gets switched around and she ends up with the worst property. That's not fair. So therefore, the adrakta has to have written in it that she can only collect from the property that he inherited. Because then there's no way he can switch around on her which property she collects. And therefore, she invests in the property. Then what? Then she can keep the property. There's no way you can take away that property from her, and it will come out the way Beis Din wants it, that she gets the property, and the property that she invested, she gets it. But the fact that Rabba Bashila had a Havamina to think otherwise is enough to say that it's not a mistake of a sofer, because even a Talmud Chacham could make such a mistake, and the omission of the one line in the Adrachta, of this line in the Adrachta, was not a Tau Sofer, was a real mistake, not a Tau Sofer. And therefore, you're out of luck because you don't have now you have an invalid adrachta. And,
she can't get the payers, but she can still get the...
She get the adrachta rewritten properly and collect, right?
Or she can at least get, even if she doesn't do that, she could still get the adrachta, which would just be what gives her the rights to the payers from that day, right? But the property itself...
No, the adrachta gives the rights to get the property, but the adrachta gives the rights to retroactively get the payers. So if he writes her adrachta again today, she can collect the land from here to forward. I mean, the only benefit of having the earlier adrakta...
She gets a new adrakta. She right. won't have those payros anyway.
Right.
I mean, it's
exactly.
from the new date.
Exactly. So today she can collect the land by getting a new adrakta, but then she loses out on collecting retroactively the payros. Mm-hmm. So the land, she doesn't lose out because she just get a new document written. The thing is whether she can collect from the time the original adrakta was written until now, then can she collect the payros? And that, since he invalidated the adrakta, she can't do that. All right. So we'll stop here. We'll start on the new Mishnah Shabbos.